But right now, it is time for us to be joined by our good friends from the Berkshire Edge. You could find, of course, the Berkshire Edge at theberkshireedge.com. They are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with news and information from South County and surrounding areas. And we get together here on a Wednesday morning and cover just some of the stories they're following. And we say good morning. Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're a little sleepy, but other than that, we're happy to be with you.
Well, there's nothing wrong with being a little sleepy, especially with the hours you guys keep.
Yeah, no, we keep very late hours because you know, we pull together all the news at night, so.
Anyway,
good morning.
Good morning. It's like was Newman said on Seinfeld, the mail never stops. News never stops.
Stops, right? The news never stops.
News never stops. Well, let's go to the news, and let's go to the Great Barrington Select Board.
This is
an interesting story that we talked a little bit about, but once again, the town wants to really slow down the way rental properties are, and there's an idea going up there, and there's people for it, and there's people against it.
Well, you know, the issue is that there is no housing available. I mean, housing has become so expensive in Great Barrington and in surrounding areas. You know, I think, I'm sure it's happening in Connecticut as well, but the housing market has been white hot for the last year. Houses have become very expensive, and we continue to face this issue that locals can't find housing, or people at entry-level jobs, or even people, you know, municipal workers, can't find housing. And in the meantime, a lot of people are buying up affordable housing, fixing it up, and making it available for short-term rentals. So this is what the Great Barrington Select Board discussed. The Select Board and the Planning Board met jointly to discuss short-term rentals, and there was a proposal by Lee Davis, who's the Select Board Vice Chair, that forbid it forbid operators of short-term rentals from renting residential units or rooms not located within the operator's primary residence or on the same tax parcel as the operator's primary residence. In other words, she's proposing that short-term rentals are fine in your own home, but this discourages people or prevents people from buying houses that they don't live in just for the purpose of short-term rentals.
You know, it's a problem. My daughter got married last summer, and they were looking to buy a house. It took them, they looked at, I think it was over 35 houses in a row, and they were outbid each time because the housing crisis down in Virginia Beach was so staggering. And, finally, after 4 months really of looking and putting in a bid, they were able to get a house. It's absolutely incredible because it's a problem that is affecting just about everywhere in this country.
Right.
And it really hit home here with the pandemic and people moving into this area during the pandemic. And you're right. There's more and more houses that are being purchased and then renovated and either sold at a high price or being used as rental units.
Right. They talk about how, you know, someplace in the article, our reporter says that he talks about pricing, that, you know, that the average monthly price for a rental is something like $900, but for a short-term rental, you can get, $100 and something a night. Oh, yes.
$150
a night. So you would get your $900 in only 6 nights. So, you know, you can make so much more money on short-term rentals.
it's a problem that that is only going to grow because it's one of those problems that's so intricate. People have rights on both sides, but the basic human right is, and Bernie Sanders said this all the time, is the right to a fair paying job, the right to health care, and a right to have some place to live.
Right.
I mean, it can't get any more basic than that. And they're all tied together. Well,
Lee Davis is concerned that, you know, we would become this kind of rental town, you know, rent the town. And that's what she's concerned about.
Yeah, it's a problem that's, like we said, it's cropping up all over the place, but especially in desirable areas like in Great Barrington and like in Salisbury and Sherry, in these desirable areas that are close to major metropolitan areas, we have an industry, recreation, and people come here for vacations. So you add all that up, and it leads to the problem that we see. It's good to see that Great Barrington's taking some action on this. Whether or not what comes of it is going to be interesting, but it's good to see that they're taking the lead on something like this.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also surprised. I mean, the people who came to the select board to oppose it were obviously people who have bought houses to make into Airbnbs or short-term rental houses. But I'm also surprised that we haven't heard anything from the hotel industry. Because, I mean, I know we have, you know, two couples, friends of ours, who are coming to visit us next weekend, and never occurred to them to stay in a hotel. They, you know, they are staying in an Airbnb. They're staying in a house nearby. They want, you know, they wanted some independence. So, you know, this is wonderful that they, you know, they were able to find something for, it wasn't $150 a night, it's about $250 a night. I think it's hard to find a decent rental, a decent short-term rental for $150 a night in Great Barrington and surrounding towns.
Well, so, I've been surprised that hotels in across the country aren't up in arms, because people that operate these bed and breakfasts and all these new sites, they don't have to meet the same safety requirements that hotels do. They don't have nearly
the same taxes.
They don't pay the same taxes. They don't have the same expenses. And it really is, you know, you look at our area, and we have a lot of hotels and motels, and it really is unfair competition. So I've always been amazed at how quiet the hotels have been. It's just the way it is. It's just it's like the taxi cab drivers in New York City. You know? They found, you know, they got to pay $20,000-$30,000 for a medallion to be a taxi cab driver, and somebody can just become a Lyft or an Uber driver.
I know. I feel so badly. There are taxi drivers who are in such debt, having bought their medallions at $1 million.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
They're worth so much less.
Yep. We'll go on to the next story, and that is the president of the Berkshire County chapter of the NAACP, I guess, has written an essay for you on what he perceives to be the erosion, and he's absolutely right, of equal rights for all citizens, especially citizens of color.
Yeah, this is Dennis Powell, he's executive director of the local branch of the NAACP, and he's concerned about what he sees as an erosion of, at least a perceived erosion of tolerance, you know, and he sees a rise in racial bigotry in America, and he's cites that the recent events in Kenosha, Wisconsin, as an example
of vigilantism.
Vigilantism. And he has a little history that he cites, which is pretty interesting. But it's a cautionary story, appeal to people to watch out and for this kind of vigilantism that has lurked in America since for centuries.
Yeah. No, and he talks about, I mean, for example, the Central Park Five, you know, five young black men who were accused of attacking and raping a woman in Central Park in 1989. Of course, Donald Trump was calling for the death penalty for them, and they were all convicted, and a few years later, or 10 years later, they were let out. No, it wasn't 10 years later. Yeah, they were, well, it was...
It was a long period of time.
2002.
Yeah, they
11
they
years
were,
later.
11
13
years
later.
Later. Right. They were, they were all cleared, you know. This kind of rush to judgment, and vigilantes like George Zimmerman, who shot somebody in Florida, and, you know, and, I mean, there are just several, and was never convicted. There's several examples of what he's calling vigilantism, you know, which is eroding the country and their communities and the lives of black children.
You're right, and you know the one thing that happened at the trial in Georgia, and the interesting thing about Georgia, yeah. where they convicted the three men who did what they did, is Georgia is a state that is slowly turning. Where more and more people of color are becoming a major voting bloc.
Yeah.
And sooner or later in this country, and it might not be in our lifetimes, but it will come to a point where the major voting bloc will be non-white. And
yes.
And
the major population
yeah.
will be non-white.
And I see people trying to forestall this with what we see happening, and I see the frustration of people of color. It's just amazing what's happening. It's not only in this country now, but unfortunately, it seems to be infecting what's happening in the world. As a matter of fact, if you look around the national news, but so that's an interesting story about that essay that's in your at
Berkshire.com. It's very interesting, and we're really happy that he wrote this for us.
Yeah.
Let's get on to something better, and that is news. What I was talking about here just a few minutes ago, all the celebrations that are going around here this
right.
week and onward, and you have in your Berkshire Calendar magazine a roundup of this, what you call the season of light.
Yes.
Right. Go ahead, Marcia.
This is an article, you know, we, as I've mentioned before, we publish a print magazine called Berkshire's Calendar, which comes out three times a year and is completely devoted to places to go and things to do. And so in our November, December, January issue, we have, among other things, a wonderful article called Seasons of Light, how we transform darkness with a cozy glow. And it talks about how, you know, most peoples and religions have a light celebration in the darkest days of the winter. So, you know, around in December. I mean, and we have Christmas, we have Kwanzaa, we have Hanukkah, and we have Diwali, which the Hindus, Sikhs, and Jains and Buddhists celebrate. So this is a guide to all the places around the Berkshires where you can see celebrations of light, and it includes the winter lights exhibit at Naum Keg. There's another one.
Yeah, they're sensational.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you can get a ticket, because it may already be sold out, but if you can get a ticket, you definitely go to see. I mean, it is sensational. And now Edith Wharton's house at the Mount has an exhibit called Nightwood, which is also there. You know, they're lighting up the woods and the gardens. But Springfield has something called Bright Nights at Forest Park, which is probably the biggest one of them all. It's the 900-pound Santa among all of these celebrations, and it's 26 years old, and it's a regional phenomenon, and it's listed by the American Bus Association as a top 10 holiday happening. So, and People.com, and the American Bus Association listed it as one of the top 100 attractions, and People magazine called it the top 10 holiday happening. So this is a guide to all the winter light festivals. So it's, you know, with links to information about where you can see these. So it's very nice. I mean, you know, as the days get shorter and shorter until we get to December 21st or 22nd,
right,
people have figured out a way to make light.
That's one of the great things about New York City or any major city. Even though it gets dark at 4:30, it doesn't get dark in the city. It really doesn't, and you always feel more alive at this time of year.
Yeah, in the city, than you do out here.
You really do.
It's so dark.
You know, the next story is a very interesting story, and I think what's interesting about this. It's nice to be reminded about what happened to Sammy Rose Stamo, who was from Sheffield, and she was killed in Kenya when her plane crashed. She should be remembered for the work she was doing for health for women. And now her family has gotten together in her memory and established a fellowship.
Yes. Right.
Yes, it is. It's a. She was on that but 3 years ago on that Ethiopian Airlines flight that went down, and
this is the Boeing plane crashed.
Yeah,
where
Boeing,
a couple of them crashed.
Yeah. And she was in Africa working for the Think Well Institute. Her family has now created a fellowship in her name to provide young women and entrepreneurs who want to be entrepreneurs mentorship and funding and advice to pursue, as we said, unique health projects. So it's in her name. It's a wonderful tribute to her.
It leaves her legacy open to other people people years later can benefit from her legacy by being able to follow the same path. That's what's great about it. It's a heartwarming story.
What a tragedy, though.
Yeah. I mean, she was so bright and young and beautiful and dedicated and doing very good work. So we have a list of the five projects that are in the first round of funding, and they are, and the women who are running them, and they are very interesting projects.
And quite a diverse group.
Yes.
And around the world, in Indonesia, in Africa, and it's quite stunning what's her legacy has been able to establish, and so at least some good has come out of that.
Well, and she's Ralph Nader's niece, so she comes from a family that of doers and activists. So they were able to pull this together very effectively.
Well, it's just a great story, and it's a tragedy for the family and her friends and her, but you can turn that tragedy into a nice, warm, bright light for the future for other people.
Yes, I mean, it does show that, the importance of moving on.
Well, I want to
I
want to go to your next story, because this is an interesting story. Sheila Clary has written a story. She's been a teacher, but a profile of a student who's struggling over the decision whether to continue in higher education or not. And that is a topic that really delves and will be around with us, and even more important, into the future.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, I mean, this is, I think, a subject that doesn't get discussed as much as it should. You know, everyone is being encouraged to go to college. And yet, you know, college is maybe not necessary for, you know, to have a nice life and to make a good living. And so Sheila has really just sort of, you know, she had a long interview with a student who was trying to figure out whether he should, you know, go on to college or whether he should think about, and we've talked about this before, whether he should think about, you know, professional, a career, technical or career education. You know, there are many jobs and skills going begging because people think that they should have a liberal arts college and nobody wants to be a plumber or an electrician where you can make very good money and be your own boss. And so this is really, I mean, this is really almost a verbatim.
Well, especially out here, the job market for people who work in auto body shops, for electricians, painters, you name it, all these trades. You develop and you can learn these trades very inexpensively without any money. And then, as you grow with it, sooner or later, you'll end up owning your own business. I mean,
we watch. David and I are now addicted to this old house, in part because we live in an old house, but also because it's so interesting to watch them solve problems and make something, you know. And they're running an apprenticeship program on the television series to introduce people to, you know, to the trades. But you know, these are bright, interesting men and women who are working in these trades. They're very skilled, and the product of their labor is really beautiful.
All right. In the final couple of minutes, I want to get you the next story because we only have about 2.5 minutes left, and that is the healthcare system in Massachusetts. We'll focus on Massachusetts because that's what this story is about, but it's basically all over the country. But the governor has now issued guidance to hospitals to minimize non-essential procedures to keep space open for those who are affected by the pandemic.
Yeah.
Well, good for Governor. Good for him. Good for Charlie Baker. We're in a healthcare crisis because of this pandemic,
mm-hmm.
and he's taking steps to make sure that there will be enough hospital beds open for people who are suffering from this pandemic, and that's what his guidelines are intended to assure people.
Right.
And so we had an update on his orders for the hospital systems in the state. So he's trying to deal with, as we all are, with this pandemic.
Right.
Well, and
do we have time for another 30 seconds?
Yeah, as long as it's 30 seconds.
Yeah. So I just want you to know, Sheila Clary, who wrote this article about the student, is hosting a members only webinar for The Edge this evening. It's going to be an interview with the leaders of an organization called the Patriotic Millionaires, who are working against the inequality that they perceive in our country, because they feel that this inequality is destabilizing and dangerous. So this is for members of The Edge. So if people would like to join The Edge as a member and help us continue with our work, and also be invited to participate in this very interesting discussion, they just have to go to theberkshireedge.com/membership and join us today and participate tonight.
All right. The Berkshire Edge.
Was that 30 seconds?
You did it.
Okay.
TheBerkshireEdge.com is where you'll find all these stories. And, of course, you can join them right here on Robin Hood Radio as well. Guys, have another great week, okay?
Yeah, you too, Marshall.
You too. Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
That is the Berkshire Edge on Robin Hood Radio. And you can find them, as I said, TheBerkshireEdge.com. com.